Boker Tov, world. Today's daf in Masechet Sanhedrin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Ayin Chet. And we're almost at the very top. We're at the Toner Rabbanan. So we've been talking about the various dinim of the specifics of the Chiyuv Misa. We're dealing with the Rotzeach. We haven't gotten yet to the dinim of the Iran Nidachat, which is the only other case that we had of the Chiyuv of Hereg, otherwise known as Cherev, which is the, as we say, this is the question of our Stam Misa, and we learned this out from the Kumina Kem, as we'll see. Okay, turn around. Hiko asara b'nei Adam ba'asara maklot v'meit. Now, we have an interesting halacha over here, which is that the Torah specifies a din that is called ve'ish kiyakeh, which means that it says it b'loshen yachid, which means an individual who attacks another person. I suppose you have a gang that attacks somebody. Everybody's carrying a baseball bat, and 10 people attack the same guy with 10 baseball bats. So it doesn't matter whether it's bevat achat or bezeh acharzeh. So whether they all time it to hit the guy at the same time, play ball, or whether it's one after the other, they would still be putter because of that halacha, and each one of them may have even hit him enough that itself would have killed him, but it doesn't matter what direction we do it, because, look, consider, first of all, if they all hit him at the same moment, so then, basically, you cannot be mechayev any one of them, because every one of them could claim that we don't have data that he certainly would have died just from me, since we have, in fact, another 9 people hitting him. And if they hit them one after another, the first one may have hit him strongly enough that it could have killed him. But the last, if that's the case, then the last 9 would be able to say, well, I mean, this guy was doomed anyway. He was already, the guy had smashed his skull. He would have died anyway. And we'll see later on that in that case, if he's not considered to be able to survive, then you're not chaya for killing him. Now, we'll see under what circumstances that's true. But in any event, even the first guy can claim that since we don't really have data, because it's possible that the guy would have survived. I mean, look, you can't be mechayev me when, in fact, the process of his death was interrupted by the other attacks, and therefore we end up not being able to be mechayev any of them. So it wouldn't matter what, whether it's one after the other or at the same time. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira argues, and he says, look, there's a different issue to consider over here. If they're not simultaneous, and you have these guys one after the other, so then the last person, do we have any question that even though he may have been definitely doomed and he was going to die, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira holds, as we're going to see later on, that if you're mekarev mitato, if you make a person who otherwise would have died anyway, but you cause him to die an instant before he would have otherwise died, that's murder. What's the difference whether he would have died in 10 minutes, or would he have died in 10 years, or would he have died in 100 years? Point is, everybody's dying, and nonetheless, the Torah considers you to be chayev for hastening his death. You could always claim, hey, I have incontrovertible evidence that this guy was going to die anyway, so why should I be chayev? And we'll see how that argument's going to stand up in court, right? So therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, being mekarev mitato, if he died a little bit faster, that's what the Torah is being mechayev you on for killing. You will see that this is actually dependent in how we understand the lashon of the psukim in the Torah. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, actually the machlokas here between the Tanakam and Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira is based on a pasuk. Ushnei mikra chadoshu. Both of these shitot look at the same pasuk, and they understand it differently. Now, when you say every day, how do you understand that pasuk? he won't get all of his anger out, or are you saying, let's hope none of his anger, right? So what does kol chamato mean? We certainly hope it means lo ya'ir any chamato. Well, we have the same lashon over here, because it says, ve'ish ki yakeh kol nefesh adam. So does that mean any or all? That's the question. It's exactly the same issue. So Rabbanan say, look, it says kol nefesh. Kol nefesh means all. So then that means you cannot be chayiv unless you killed the entire nefesh. I mean, not that he is otherwise has all of these things that are killing him anyway. The other people are killing him, and he was going to die in another 10 minutes. So you took away a life that wasn't a normal life. It was on its way out. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira says, on the contrary, kol nefesh, any life, kol dehu nefesh, exactly. And therefore you would be chayev, even for being mikarev mitato, that itself is enough to be mechayev you. Says Rava, we better make this clear, because this can lead to some easy misunderstandings, actually, in both directions. Look, there's no machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira and the Chachomim about someone who is horig et hatrefa, shehu patur. So if someone is trefa, that is the one case where the Torah actually gives a set of definitions. And remember, this is a whole masechet to get through to make sure that you understand what precisely is that trefa, how is it defined. But it's a series of very well-defined internal defects that the Torah describes as no longer being considered to be viable life. So in that case, now halacha lemaisa, we couple this, as the Rambam points out, with an additional requirement, and that is that besides the Torah's definition of the trefa, we also have to know, medically speaking, that this person would have died and that we don't have any way of curing this. Because even though the trefot are absolute in defining the nature of kashrut, they are not absolute in terms of reality, as the Chazon Ish points out, just like many of the issues in the Torah, including the astronomical data, mathematical data, the value of pi, and so on and so forth. They're not meant to be descriptions of an absolute reality, because humans don't really have much of a brain for absolute reality anyway. So the question is, where do we cause the approximations to end? But, I mean, that's the point. So if it comes to the question of kashrut, where the dinim of trefa are defined, fine, then I understand that that was a definition, a halachic definition. The fact that there may be completely new technologies available that would address exactly the issues that are raised by the trefa is not something that's going to change. So you say, well, this guy could survive. He could always have a heart transplant. You know, okay, that's all very nice. But that is not included, obviously, in the dinim of the Torah. So, therefore, when it comes to the application of the dinim of trefa to the assumption that you wouldn't be chayef for killing him because he's not considered to be viably alive, if technology makes him viably alive, then it would not make sense to apply that halacha in these terms. That's clear from the Rambam and the recent tshuvas by Reb Meisha and so on, speak that out in more detail. So, if you kill a trefa, so then you would not be chayev. If you kill somebody who is dying, so this guy has terminal cancer, he's on his last leg, he's a goseis bidei shamayim, but that is part of the actual way in which people live and die. And therefore, it's considered to be that that is the stage of life that he is at. And in that case, you definitely would be chayev. And this is not the same as the concept of a trefa that is defined as something that is not fully in possession of what is needed to live. So the standard wearing down of life, in which there's the gradual breakdown of various systems in the body, that is not considered to be trefa. That's considered to be goseis. And a goseis, you kill somebody, even if he was only going to live for another moment, nobody argues about that. That's killing. That's the life that he had. The question is, how about if it's not part of a natural process, but rather somebody shot this guy? Or in this case, where you have somebody who had a baseball bat, and these other people had attacked him. So essentially, this guy is dying. But he's not dying because it's part of the natural process of his life running down. It's because he was attacked. So he's a ghost-ace. But he's a ghost-ace only because of the fact that he was injured by other people. So now, the last guy to hit him, and obviously it's going to make him die a moment earlier, so that's the question. Is a person chayev for attacking a ghost-ace bidei adam? That explains Rava's the machlokas between the chachomim and Rabbi Yehuda ben Matera over here. So mar medame leila trefa. The Rabbanan say it's the same thing as a person who doesn't have what it takes to survive. And mar medame leila mashenkin Rabbi Yehuda ben Matera says it's the same as the ghost is bidei shamayim. He's basically dying, and to kill him a moment earlier is to kill a dying person. But, I mean, why? You haven't explained the logic of it. Man medame the medami le treifa. So let's talk about the chachamim for a moment. They say he's the same as a treifa. I mean, I don't understand what makes him more similar to a treifa than to a gosis bidei shamayim. Because, says the Gemara, the point of a gosis bidei shamayim is that there has been no external change that is a maisa that was done to him. And therefore, he is similar in this case. Hayis avi be maisa, that is what happens with a treifa. Always the issue of a treifa is that something directly affected and changed measurably some part of the body. He has a hole in his lungs. He's missing his a part of whatever we're talking about. I mean, I don't want to go into the details, obviously, because we'll have to explain the difference between a hole or a puncture and this. I don't want to get into it. But whatever it is, there was a maisa that was actually affected him. Mashenkin, when you have breakdowns of systems, which is part of the nature of the ghosts b'dei shamayim, breakdowns in systems are not a particular maisa to a particular point. And therefore, it's much more similar to the case of the treifa here, because you actually directly, physically, and traceably affected an element of an organ in his body. Well, he considers this guy who was attacked and injured by his baseball bat. I mean, he considers this to be someone who actually would be the same as someone who's dying naturally. I mean, isn't he more similar to the treifa in which, like, something was caused? What's his logic? No, there's a total difference, because, look, the whole point of a treifa is the definition of the specific issue. It's not like, okay, something was done to him, and we could trace what was done to him. Okay, so let's trace what was done to him. Well, he's got internal bleeding over here, and he's got some hemorrhaging in his brain over there, and so on. That's all very nice, but that's much more similar to systemic issues. It's not that we're going to say this specific thing is going to be what kills him. So we have now a confluence of issues. Mashenkin, when it comes to treifa, the Torah defines very specifically. So let's say you have mechat chesimoni. Okay, so you've got a cut right through the trachea. All right, so that the Torah calls a treifa. It's all very nice that you would be able to put a tube in there, sew this up, and so on, and then the guy would recover. That's not the point. The point is that right now, the status of the organism is non-functional the way the Torah defines it. You can't refer here to a specific, you can only refer to a general status, and that's similar, therefore, to goseis, and not to treifa. So that's as far as Rabbi Yehuda ben Matera. Toni Tanaka made Rav Sheshes. Ve'ish kiyakeh kol nefesh adam. So this is coming to tell me, fascinatingly, it says a person will hit. Kol nefesh adam. That includes a case where somebody hits a person without enough koach to kill him, and then another person comes and actually does kill him. The second guy is chayev. I don't understand. I mean, it's obvious. What's the difference whether he happened to be an injured person? What do you mean, ein bo kedei la'amid? That's trivial. Ain bo g'day la mi, pshita? Why do I need a brighta to tell me that? A 2-year-old will tell you that. No, sorry. What it means is over here, yesh bo g'day la mi, I meant to say, he didn't die because he wasn't given a chance to die. He had to hit him with something that this guy would have expired after 24 hours. Somebody comes along and shoots him through the head and kills him at that moment. So the second person would be Chayef. Oh, okay. So then that would be the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda ben Batera, because Rabbi Yehuda ben Batera says, even if he would have died no matter what, but for being Mekarev Mitato, we're going to be Mekarev him. Now, we have some halakhas over here of Rava. And these are various elements that have to do with the treifa being either the victim or the perpetrator of a murder. So Amar Rava, first of all, if somebody murders a treifa, he would be putter. Okay, that we said before. But if the treifa murdered someone, now then we get into some complications. Why is that? Because if the treifa committed murder right in front of the Bezdin, so then he would be chayev. But shelo bifnei beitin, he would be putter. Why do I say this? If he murdered someone in front of Bezdin, we don't need witnesses, right? Because we only need witnesses to recreate the crime for the dayanim. But over here, the dayanim witness the crime themselves, and therefore they don't need witness. They actually paskin on the basis of what they saw. So therefore, you would be chayev. Now, you wouldn't really be chayev because of the Gemara before. Remember, we learned before that if the judges themselves were the ones who saw the murder, they're not kosher to paskin the murder. Why? Because they're unable to work on Hatzalah, because they're completely, their mind is like made up. Okay, this guy, we got to get rid of this guy. A cold-blooded murderer, a Hamasnik. They're just going to kill him. But it says in the Pasuk, V'hitzilu ha'eda, they can't be matzil. So then what would be the right for them to paskin halacha like this, being as they don't have the ability to be the normal president? So therefore, we need a special Pasuk. The special pasuk is Uvi Arta Hara Mikirbecha. Bezdin is responsible for getting rid of things that are bad for the world. That is this kind of evil. You're mechuyev to be mevaer. Get it away from inside of yourself. So remove it from your midst, as it's translated. So if that's the case, they would be chayev. Now, there's another approach to this. There's a beautiful approach by the Reb Kiveger. Reb Kiveger says like this, the makor, this is brilliant, the makor of the din that we actually do murder to atone for murder, the way the Torah puts it is, v'natata nefesh tachat nefesh. The problem is that the treifa doesn't have a nefesh to be able to take because he's not considered to be a nefesh shalim. So you'll never be able to be Mekayim Nefesh Tachas Nefesh if he doesn't have the Nefesh to give. And therefore, we need a special Pasuk, but there's another issue. The other issue is, V'yarta Hara Mikirbecha. There are other approaches as well. But anyway, it's fascinating that we're not saying that this is the normal din, that they could kill the defendant because they saw it. That this requires a special Gili. But if you need witnesses, there is no way to bring witnesses against the treifa. That's the brilliant point that Rava is bringing out. Why can't you bring witnesses against the treifa? It's very simple. See, Ori already chaps what it is, especially with the little rabbit. Now, if that's the case, there's a simple reason. In order to have kosher witnesses, you need to be able to be mezim those witnesses, right? Is not considered to be kosher testimony. What would happen if the witnesses that claim to have seen this treifa kill somebody, someone comes along and says, how could you be made that this guy killed? You were with us somewhere else at that time. What would be the din? Would we kill those Edim Zomim because Vasitem lo kasher zamam lasot v'achiv or not? We would not. Why not? Because if they had shot the treifa, they would have been punter. So if they're made against the treifa, it's not going to be more karma than shooting him. Therefore, there is no way for those witnesses to suffer the consequences of testifying falsely against him. Because we can't be mazim them. Any witnesses that don't bear any responsibility for the testimony are not kosher witnesses. Therefore, says Rava, there's nothing to do. There'd be no way to bring witness against him. Beautiful. Okay, so we see, therefore, that there is an innate distinction between bifnei beis din v'shelo bifnei beis din. Because in this case, it's edut she'i ata yochola hazima, v'chol edut she'i ata yochola hazima is not considered to be edut at all. V'yomar Rava. Another issue, which on the surface seems to be the same, but we'll talk about it. So suppose someone is roveya et ha-treifa. So somebody rapes a treifa. He would be chayev. But if a treifa rapes somebody else, we're talking about male to male here, treifa sherava, if it's bifnei beit din, so the same thing. Bifnei beit din, I would say, is chayev because the beit din actually witnessed this. Mashenken shelo bifnei beit din patur. Bifnei beit din chayav tichtivu v'yarta hara mikirbecha, just like we said before. Shelo bifnei beit din patur, davile educhi iata yochola hazima. Rav, I mean, why are you belaboring this? Abdulamali, you said that already. Why do I need two separate statements? I mean, Heinoach, same thing you said before about the treifa and murder. What's the difference whether it's treifa and murder or treifa and sodomy? It's exactly the same issue over here. You're right. But there is a part that is important. And that's why I brought it up. And that was the part about how roveyat ha-treifa itzrichalei. Look, what is the din if somebody has sex with a corpse? Then they're putter. And this is obviously not our sugya here, but that is not considered to be included in the Isser of Erva. So if somebody rapes a treifa, you might think that the fact that he's considered to be dead, as far as the Torah is concerned, means, in the same way that there would be no chiyuv for murdering him, so there would be no chiyuv for raping him, because he's not even alive. So basically what, you're having sex with a corpse? There's no chiyuv for that. So ma'o detima, lahavi kamandim eshamesh mit v'lipater. Therefore, kamash malan, sex has nothing to do with the definitions of life as it would appear in the sugya of the chiyuv. Sex has to do with fun and pleasure. So since as far as the perpetrator is concerned, the guy seems alive, he looks alive, he feels alive, so that's good enough in the matrix to make you chayev for raping him. That I wanted to make certain, says Rava, that was clear. So because of that, I brought up the whole thing again, but you're right. The only part that's important was that little piece. So next thing I want to tell you about treifas, his Rava says, Edim she'ilu b'treifa v'huzmu ein neharagim. We didn't know that a guy was a treifa. Okay, so they had come to court. The court assumed that this guy is a regular person. They were made that he had murdered. And then it turned out that they were actually Edim Zomimim. And then it turns out that this guy is actually, was a treifa. So, okay, we can't go ahead and kill them because, as we said, there's no kasher zamam since even if they would have shot the guy, they would have been put. But how about if the witnesses themselves are treifot themselves and they were made against someone, a regular person, and that he is chayev misa, then they would, in fact, be killed. Ravashi said, how could they be killed? If the witnesses who are treifa were made against somebody else, then there would be no way that the people that testified against them could be killed because they're treifa. So the edim against them would be edim she'iyat o'chol hazimah, right? So then, by the same token as your original point that you cannot accept a case where the Adim themselves won't be killed because of the fact that they would have victimized a Trefa, so then, in this case, how can witnesses who are Trefa be Chayev, since the witnesses against them wouldn't be Chayev, even if they shot them? So it makes no sense what you're saying. The same issue that you brought up before on the first level of the testimony should be applicable to any of the steps down. At any point that we would not be able to be Mazim, the Adim, that would have claimed that these Adim themselves are Adim Zomimim, that's the end of the story, because they would not be kosher Adim. So what are you saying? Why in the world would you be Chayev? Why, what indeed is the Svar of Rava that they're Chayev? Apparently, what Rava takes for granted is that since the entire din of believing the second pair of Adim is itself a chiddush, that is a violation of the normal dinim of witnesses that come up against each other. Normally, if you have two witnesses saying one thing and two witnesses saying the other thing, that's called edus akosha mukheshet. Neither of them are acceptable. And here, magically, we're going to accept this guy. So included in that magic is that we certainly do not apply the standard dinim that would be required for edus in general. And therefore, the edim against those edim are not going to be possible because of edu chiyata yachola azima. Okay. Now let's go back to Rava again. Says Rava, I got one last thing to tell you about trefas, okay? And that is about a shor that's a trefa, or a shor whose owner is a trefa. So let's think about that. A shor, which is a trefa, kills somebody. So what's the din? There, the shor is chayev to be niskal. That's the hasha'a. Who's not muted over here? So the din over there would be sako yisakel hashor. Lo yachalat b'soro, right? Bal hashor naki, and so on. Or, the shor yisakel v'gam balav yomat, depending if he's a tam or if he's a mu'at. So I say that the trefus does not affect the shor. But, if the person who owned the shor is a trefa, so then a shor with a shor's odam, of one who owned him was a trefa, and he killed, then he would be potter. Why? Because since the Torah said Hashor Yisakel, the Gamba Lav Yumat, it's telling me that I can only be Sokel the Shor in the event that his owner would have been Chayev. And therefore, Kolechet the Karina Be Gamba Lav Yumat. So since the Torah creates a situation, which of course we don't actually do, which is the Gamba Lav Yumat, and then we have the Imkof for Yushat Alav, and so on. But the idea is that the reason that the Torah puts this together, that the owner should be killed, is to tell me that if you would be able to be Mekayim Gamba Lav Yumat, so then you're Mekayim Ashor Yisakel. But if you cannot be Mekayim, Kalecha de Lo Karina Be Gamba Lav Yumat, then Lo Karina Be Ashor Yisakel. And in this case, since we could not kill the Trefa, because of the fact that it's Edashiyata Yechola Azima, so therefore we cannot kill under the same circumstances the shor that this person owns. Rav Ashi says, either case, you don't kill the shor. Because the comparison between the shor Yisakel v'gamba alav yumat teaches me a halacha, which you'll remember that the Mishnah actually defined, which is, kimitat abalim kach mitat hashor. The reason that we treat that shor to a regular case of in front of 23 and requiring two witnesses and so on. Now that shor is sitting up there, you know, having a drink of scotch while he's in the witness box and so on. The only reason we do that is because the Torah made this comparison. And therefore this comparison goes across the board. If the shor is treated the same way the owner is treated, why do I need the owner to be the trefa? If the shor is a trefa, then if he had been the owner, he would have been potter. So then he's potter. Therefore, a filu shor trefa, where the owner is not a trefa, shaharag is potter. Why? By taima kiva di ilu balim have patire, shor nami potter. The Torah compares the two, and if this shor would have been the balim, he would have been potter, and therefore, as a shor, kimitata balim, kach mitata shor. Okay. Now moving on to the next case in the Mishnah. The Mishnah talked about somebody who sicks a dog or sicks a snake to bite someone. In any of those cases, he would not be chayev, but if he actually penetrated the guy's skin, he shich et hanachash. So he takes the nachash's open mouth and jams the fangs of the nachash into the victim. So then we had a machlokas. According to Reb Yehuda, he is chayev misa, and according to the Chachamim, he's potter. Now, what is that about? Omer Rav Acha bar Yaakov, well, kishetimtzel omar, look, when you get to the bottom of this question, the only way to understand it is how do we view the relationship between the injection of the poison and the injection of the fangs. So for all intents and purposes, according to Reb Yehuda, you are chayev, must be, because we view, for all intents and purposes, the poison to be released together with the fact that the fangs are penetrating something. So as far as the actuality is concerned, that's not the point. The point is, do we view this as being an actual control by the snake, or do we view this as being instinctive and automatic with contact with something that is a bite that he's going to be injected with that poison, and that snake does not sit around thinking, well, should I press the hypodermic or not? So that's the difference in how you look at it. According to Reb Yehuda, for all intents and purposes, the eris of the nachash is right there on these teeth. As far as how we call it on the teeth, that's not what's important. But essentially, the one who takes those teeth and penetrates, he is chayev, sayev, as any murderer, and the poor nachash who has been used so cynically by this evil human, and you well know what nachashim think about those evil humans, the source of all evil, after all, in a perfect world. So the fact that this nachash was used by that evil human is no reason to be b'chayev the nachash, and therefore the nachash is putter, because the nachash is a completely passive non-participant in this entire story. That would be Reb Yehuda's approach. Whereas according to the Chachamim, the eris nachash miatzmo meki. No, wait a minute. This nachash has got control over that poison. He's got to press the hypodermic. If you find a nachash pressing a hypodermic, then he is chayev. It's all his fault. And the other guy is only an accessory. So therefore, if that's the case, the murderer isn't the human. The murderer is the snake. This is, of course, the human point of view. Lefichach, nachash biskila v'hamakish patur. So that this argument apparently had very, very powerful geological resonances. There were these nechashim that ended up being busted up by these human mammals and stuff. Oh my gosh, it took a long time, but this is a long-term machlokas. Anyway, so this is the machlokas that we have over here, which brings us to that other fantastic mammal by the name of Sir Richard. Go for it. There we go. Hamake et chaveiro. All right. Now the question is, when we make these determinations, okay, I mean, we talked about the case in the previous Mishnah, that we basically are not going to be able to kill the guy because we don't really have data, because all these other people smashed him with their baseball bat, and therefore we can't trace exactly whether that original baseball bat killed him or not, and therefore even the first guy is potter, even though it looked like it was good enough to kill him, stuff like that. So, I mean, basically, you can have variability in a person's response to an attack, right? Not only variability by the individual, but variability in terms of the way in which the impact is going to impact him over the course of time. So you very often have an initial response. You have sometimes amazing type of responses from the body that come out of left field that nobody expected. You could even have cancers that are suddenly going to disappear. I mean, we know very little about the entire story of immune responses and other type of issues that are involved. So because of that, we need to keep our fingers on the pulse, so to speak, to be able to determine whether this person's initial blow against the other individual was the cause of death. And we can't say just because somebody pulled a trigger and another person dies, that that means that his pulling the trigger was the direct cause of death. We need to make sure that there weren't other issues that were involved. Maybe the guy got a heart attack from fear because he was penetrated by this bullet and he died from the heart attack. Or maybe he actually started by recovering, and then he got an infection, which made that recovery not work. Well, I mean, then you're not going to blame the guy who shot him because he would have recovered. You're going to have to take the pathogens to court. So in any event, in all of these cases, what we require is a clear-cut medical analysis, and we do the best we can at any particular point to be able to determine how directly connected the pulling of the trigger was to the person's ultimate death. So let's imagine a case like this. First of all, so somebody hits a person, and we take the lushan of the pusik that we had in the whole discussion that we just had recently in the parsha. We had the v'chidi rivuna nashim v'ka ish et re'eu be'even or be'agrov. We use even or agrov because that was the story of the two people that were fighting, remember? Okay, so here he's ma'ake chavero be'even or be'agrov, okay? The Amadu Lemita. So initially, the medical assessment was, this guy is going to die. Looks bad. And then, over the course of the week, he starts recovering. Vehekel Mimashaya. And at that point, we did another assessment, and we said, well, looks like the guy got away with it, and he's going to live. And then, all of a sudden, things go south. And Liachar began his bid. All of a sudden, he gets terrible fever and he dies. So the Tanakhama says he would be chayev because look, obviously the original assessment was more accurate because in fact he did die. He never really recovered. And because of that, we can stick with the original assessment. And now we will kill him. Whereas Rabbi Nechemya says, no, what do you mean? If he started to get better, then why in the world should we go back to the original assessment and say there was no new point that came up that made him worse? I don't understand why we would assume that. Don't we have a chiyav v'yitzilu ha'eda? Do we know that because we had that original assessment that this guy could die? So therefore, if he ultimately dies, it means it was a direct causal death? We've seen that it was not causal. For Haraya, the guy started to get better. And therefore, look, raglayim ledavar, we have definitely what to stand on and to say that this was not a straight path from the attack to the death, because why would he have suddenly turned all of a sudden get worse when he was doing well and was recovering? Now, Rabbi Nechemya actually has a beautiful makor in the pasuk itself that backs him up. Says Rabbi, look, let's take a look at the braita. Tana Rabbana, you know what Rabbi Nechemya was reading? Et zo darash Rabbi Nechemya. So we've got this whole beautiful description in the pasuk itself. Im yakum v'hitalech b'chutz al mishanto v'nika hamakeh. So this is a very interesting pasuk. Somebody was, and that's what we learn out at the end of that pasuk, rak shifto yitein v'rapo yirapeh. So if somebody was attacked and he dies, that you're chayev. But if he walked outside, even under his mishenet, now there's a machlokas which we'll talk about how to understand this mishenet. Does it mean that he only walked outside on crutches? Does it mean that he walked outside under his own power? And that's a mishenet, the mishenet of his body. But in any event, if he ended up walking outside, then we're not going to kill the makeh, but then he has to pay. He has to pay for his lost work, and he has to pay his medical expenses, and so on. Okay, so says Rabbi Nechemya. Now, what do you think that pasuk is referring to? Do you think that the pasuk is telling me that if he walked outside and was totally recovered, walking along happily under his own power, sitting in the coffee shop, drinking a nice cup of coffee with Naftali, or anything like that. So you think that, what, we're going to kill the guy? Because what? Because he gets a heart attack a week later? I mean, that's insane. So do you think that we're going to kill the guy because originally we said, oh my gosh, this guy's going to die. Now he never died. Do you think that we're going to kill him? Of course not. I don't need a pussy to tell me that. There was no victim. So how are we going to kill somebody if there's no victim? Obviously, what happened over here is, in order for us to explain why we would need a pussy, obviously we need the pussy because we're talking about a case where initially we said in the court, medical report indicates this guy is going to die. And then he starts getting better. And he's doing fine. But in the end, he does die. What else would the pasuk be telling us? So it's telling you, believe Rabbi Nehemiah, that your first assessment is not what you fall back on just because the results back up that assessment. Obviously, things are changed in the middle. And if your later assessment was that this person is going to survive, then you needed to do an assessment for medical bills and for lost work and so on, right? That's what it's telling you. So in the event that this guy seems to be doing better, so then make another assessment. Let's have a report of his medical expenses. How else do you read the pasuk? Gosh, that sounds pretty good, actually. So how did the rabbanon understand this pasuk? What did they do with v'nika hamakeh? Isn't it obvious that v'nika hamakeh? It may be obvious that v'nika hamakeh, but it's telling you that you need to actually be nikah manakeh. What do you mean, I need to? It means that you have kept this guy in prison until you know for a fact that he did not murder. Now you let him go. That's the chiddush. Melamed shechofshim oto. This teaches us that this guy is kept in prison until we know whether he's a murderer or not. And we don't say, well, right now we don't have data. Let him go and have a nice vacation in Tahiti while we decide if we're going to kill him. No. So that's the point. Somebody needs to let him out of prison. V'nika hamakeh. You're right. Obviously, he's free. But the chiyuv is, you have to make him free. So apparently he wasn't free. Beautiful limud from the pasuk, right? Great. So what's Rabbi Nechemiah coming at us claiming? Trivial. It's not trivial. Great Kiddush. So what about Rabbi Nechemiah? Sorry. So what about Rabbi Nechemiah? What does he do? How does he know that we put the guy in prison? How do I know? It's a beferish pasuk that we put the guy in prison. What happened with the whole story of the Mikoshesh? So what does it say over there? Vayanichu oto b'mishmar, they put him into prison, ki lo purash ma yaseh lo, because they didn't know what they were supposed to do. So they were waiting to hear from Moshe Rabbeinu, after he had a little conversation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what to do with this guy. So that means your first response, when you don't know what to do, and over here you don't have the data, is you keep the guy in prison until it becomes clear. What are you making a big deal about something that's a beferish story in the Torah? That's a good question. Boy, this Rabbi Nechemiah is a tough Baal Machlokes. So why don't the Rabbanan learn it out from the Mekoshesh? Obviously, say the Rabbanan, Mekoshesh doesn't prove a darn thing. But Mekoshesh, they knew that he was chayav misa. It says, Mechalalei amot yumat. What do you think, they're stupid? They don't know what the din is? They knew he was chayav misa. They didn't know which misa. That was the problem. So over there, okay, we put him into prison because we know we're going to have to kill him, and then we'll find out which misa it is. So how can you learn out from there? Mekoshesh is a barktala. He didn't know what he was supposed to, what was the chiyav, and therefore you put him into prison. What does that have to do with this case? Over here, we don't know whether the person is chayav or not. So if we don't have a special pasuk then how would we know that we're supposed to put him into prison unfairly, where he could say, you're putting me into prison and you don't even know if I killed anybody? How can you do that? A person can't learn that from there. La fuke hai de lo yadinani barkatalo. We love barkatalo. This is going at each other great, right? Now, Rabbi Nechemya comes back with a killer. So what does Rabbi Nechemya do with that? All right, guys, I hear what you're saying. You knew what I was going to come back with. There's another case which is exactly the same, where they did not know that he was chai of Misa at all. And that's the case of Demigadef. And what does it say over there? Vayinichu b'mishmar lifrosh lahem alpi Hashem. They put him into jail so that they would find out whether he was chai of Misa. Ha! That's the same thing as over here. So we put this guy into jail based on that model. I don't need your pasuk of Vinika Makeh to tell me that we put him into jail. I know how to read the Bible, and the Holy Book says very clearly they put the guy into jail because they didn't know. Huh? So what did Rabbanan do with that? Rabbanan claimed that the case of the Megadev was a Hora'at Sha'a. There was no reason in this case to put him into jail. Think about it. You're going to say, maybe the guy was chai of Misa. I don't know. We never had this case before. And how many other millions of variabilities might there be across the world where we never had a case before? So you're telling me, you never know. I mean, after all, for tickling this guy in public, you might be chai of Misa. We should put him into jail. I mean, I don't know. You don't like it, so you don't like it. So therefore, you put him into jail. So obviously, the point is that it was a hora'at sha'a. They had to make a judgment call. Well, you can't make a din out of a judgment call. And therefore, I need a pasuk to tell me that where the data is lacking as general principle, we will keep this guy under our thumbs till we know whether we're chayav to kill him or not. Kidatanya, and this is very clear, that there was this difference that we insisted on before between the Megadef and the Mekoshesh. Kidatanya, Yodea haya Moshe Rabbeinu Husha Mekoshesh Bimita. Shenemar, Mechal Aleo Mot Yumat. Was there any question about a Mechal Shabbos Eschiyav? Eloloya Yodea Beze Mita Ne'erak. His problem was he didn't know what Chiyav Misa it was, because it says, Kilo Porash. There was no clear-cut pirish of what it meant by Bechalala Mot Yumat. Avo Megadev, it didn't say that at all. Lo Nemar Bo'ela Lifrosh Lema Pi Hashem. They had to say the whole thing. They had to clarify from the beginning, Shelo Haya Moshe Yodea Imu Ben Mita Kol Ikarim La. That's why we took that for granted in the previous discussion between Rabbi Nechemya and the Chachamim. So now, let's take a look again at the Pusik over here. And if you look carefully, you're going to see something fascinating. And that is that basically the Pusik is taking for granted that there were two different stages. There was a stage that which we assumed that the guy was going to die. And we had done a medical examination in order to be able to come up with a medical assessment. And then there was a second stage in which we did another assessment in order to define whether this guy has, how much this guy has to pay, in terms of shifto yitain, verapo yirapay. Let's take a look carefully at the pasuk and see that it really makes sense according to Rabbi Nechemya, because he holds that the moment that there's a change in which he appears to be now taking a different course in this recovery than initially we made the assumption of in our original assessment, the medical assessment. So Rabbi Nechemya Shita is that at this point, the initial assessment is useless because you now see that things are not going the way you thought, and therefore you're going to have to make a new assessment. I mean, that stands as a given, because according to Rabbi Nechemya, what happens in the end is never a proof that this is what was meant to happen in the beginning. Okay, so if that's the case, it's all a matter of assessment. So it would make sense that the remez in the Torah would be that there would be two separate assessments that were made, and this was the first. V'chiyirivun anashim v'ika ishet re'eu be'even obegrof v'lo yamut v'nafal lemishkav. So that's how the case opens. And then we were told, Im yakum v'italech b'chutz al mishamto, v'nika hamakeh, rak shifto yitein, v'rapo yirapeh. Now, if the only point of this pasuk is just to tell me the idea that you're chayev in ripui and you're chayev in shevet, I don't need this whole story, do I? I mean, I could simply have said, Ki rivun anashim v'kayish et reyehu v'nafala mishkav, Shifto yitain v'rapo yirapeh. I mean, this whole story is weird. V'nafala mishkav, and then he gets up, v'alacha mishkav. What a roundabout way of teaching the chiyuv that's the most important point over here, namely that you have to pay his medical expenses and that you're going to have to make up for his lost work. I mean, isn't that the whole point? It's a beautiful part of Mishpatim's description of the Chamisha Dvarim, Nezek, Tzar, Sheves, Ripui, Boshet. So each of these psukim focuses on another issue. Menachem, you don't want to miss any of these issues, I don't think. After all, each one of them is a loss of income. No greater income than knowing this sugya. So, why then does it say the whole story of this business about he's not fala mishkav and then he's yakum? Okay, so that has got to mean that im yakum ve'italech, which is completely useless, is to tell me that Rav Nechemia is exactly correct. Because what we're doing is that first, chad amadula misa v'chaya. Apparently, the whole idea was that we originally had thought that this person is going to die. Okay, so then that means the Besdin said, okay, so then this guy is going to be b'chuyav misa, and that would mean we don't care. Even if in the end a miracle happens and the guy recovers, we don't care. We will kill him. No, therefore comes along the pasuk to say, your first assessment, if it ends up not working out the way you said, is no reason to kill a guy. If in fact he ends up recovering, you'll say, well, that was a miracle. So what? So maybe it was a miracle so that the murderer shouldn't be killed. I don't know. What's your business whether it's a miracle or not? That is exactly what it was that the pasuk is coming to tell us. That in that case, if he doesn't die, v'nikaha makeh, so that this guy is therefore potter. That's why we make up a case here in which there was obviously an initial assessment, and he was nofel, and then im yakum v'italech, then we don't kill him. That's the first chiddush. So that the initial assessment is canceled. That's the point. And that's why we need the pasuk. We had already said, this guy's chayav misa. No, actually, we cancel that chiyav. All right, so that is the reason for v'lo yamut. What is that? That's telling me, even though he was paskin to be killed, if in the end lo yamut, cancel that original assessment. Fine, that I understand. That's the first part. But then we have another case where the chad Amadu Lemita Vehekel Mimasha Haya, even though ultimately he did die. And that is the other Chiddush of Rabbi Nechemia, where it says, Im Yakum Vitalech Bachutza Mishanto, that then there's a new din in which Vinika Hamakeh, even though we understand that in the end he actually did die, that would mean that if he improved, even though he dies, we do not kill him. That means that there was a second medical assessment at the point that we see he was getting better. And we said, okay, we're canceling our initial assessment. But according to the Rabbanan, why do we have two separate steps over here? According to the Rabbanan, even if he was Yakum and Hitalech, and in the end he dies, according to the Rabbanan, we don't cancel the original assessment. We do kill him. So there's no sense at all in that second part over here. The only time that he would be completely potter is if the guy completely recovers and then dies from some other case. So all it should have said, according to Rabbanan, is hika ishet reyeo beven obegrof, whatever, with all of that stuff, lo yamud, v'nafal mishkav v'nika hamakeh, rak shifto yitein, v'rapo yirapeh. That's all you need to say. What's this whole business about that he's halach, b'chut, sal nishanto? I understand. Did he die or didn't he die? He didn't die, we don't kill him. He did die, we do kill him. Why are we talking about if he walked around the marketplace? That's just like a silly story. What does the pasuk talk about that from? All we need is that first v'nika ha-makeh. So im yakum v'italech b'chutz is totally meaningless, according to the Rabbanan. The v'nika ha-makeh already tells me you have to let him out of jail. So there's no point in any of this. I don't get it. Ah, because one would be a case where amadu l'mita, and he ended up living, and one was amadu l'chaim, and he ended up dying. That would be the point. So what the Rabbanan are saying is, v'hika ishet re'ehu be'even o be'egrov, and then lo yamut v'nafal l'mishkav. So that means that he then gradually ends up dying. And this is another case. Case number two. Or, im yakum v'talech b'chutz al mish'anto, and at that point, v'nika makeh, we let him out of prison, then rak shifto yitain v'rapo yirapeh. In either of those cases, we're going to end up needing to pay ripui and shevas. Fine. So that would mean that if in the end somebody does die, but he wasn't supposed to die, where we did our original assessment, that we're not going to kill the person because we rely on our medical assessment and we say, look, the fact that he did die in the end doesn't prove anything. People die all the time from complications. So these were complications, but the complications, that's a grumma that the person who caused the injury and therefore he is just a grumma bialma. You don't kill people because in the end there were complications that killed him. That's the point. And according to Rabbi Nechemia, how does Rabbi Nechemia know that if our original assessment was that the guy would not die, and in the end he died, how do we know that we can rely on the original assessment? What kind of question is that, says Rabbi Nechemia? I don't understand. What are we, kindergarten kids? We need a pasuk to tell me that the din paskins according to the way our medical assessment is, and that anything else that's just complications is called a groma bialma? Obviously. I don't understand why we need a pasuk. The Bezdin essentially acquitted this guy. Acquitted him because of the din of the assessment. Are you allowed to take a person back into court, double jeopardy? No. That's an iser d'oraisa, right? We had that in the Mishnah. Once you potered him, you cannot turn around and be mechayev him. What do we need a new pasuk for? Tana rabbana. Well, let's take a case like this. Somebody attacks another person. The medical assessment is that the guy is going to die. And in the end, he didn't die. So then, podrinuto. At that point, he needs just to pay all of the chamisha dvarim. But what about if initially, amadu lemita, hekel mimashaya, it started now an improvement, we need a second amida, and throw out the original assessment, because obviously he's starting on a new trajectory over here. And what we do is, the second Amida is now to take into consideration the financial import of the injury. So now we're going to have to take a look at the various things, right? So that's all the Sheni is Lamoman for Nezek, Sar, Sheves, Ripui, Poshes, even though in this Pasuk we only mention the Rakshiv Toyitain Vrapo Yerape, but we know from the other Pasukim we have Chamisha Dvarim. The Chamisha Dvarim are going to be assessed only where this guy is not Chayiv Mis, obviously. So the second assessment is now a totally new way of looking at the whole case. Now, if there are complications afterwards, Imli acher kein hichbid umet. So then what's the din if he actually ends up dying? That doesn't make any difference. If he ends up dying, you still collect the chamisha dvarim. I mean, he's not there to collect it, but it goes to his heirs. It gets into his bank account. Nothing changed because he died. The original assessment is binding. And therefore, what we do is we look at that second assessment. Alech achar omed ha'emtza'i. We're not going to kill him, which would have been our initial assessment. That's canceled. So this is clearly Rabbi Nechemia's approach Divrei Rabbi Nachemya. The Chachamim say there is no omed achar omed. We don't consider the second amida to be a mizaka in Beis Din. I'm sorry, there's no such thing. Because remember, according to the Chachamim, the initial assessment, if borne out by the events, and in the end he does die. So we say, not like Rabbi Nechemia, well, cancel that assessment, and now we have to assume that there were some complications that were not related to the original. Oh, really now? So it's just a coincidence that we were right on target when we said this guy's going to die in a week, right? It's not a coincidence. That assessment was an accurate assessment borne out by the facts, say the Chachamim. And therefore, there's no such thing, ein omed achar omed, which obviously doesn't mean we don't make an assessment for the financials. It simply means there's no binding second assessment that's going to cancel the original assessment, according to the Chachamim, which is the whole point of the Machlokas. Tanya Yidach. And there's another Braita that talks about these complications. Amadu Lemita. If after they already decided in the court that this guy is chayev because he's going to die, Omdimo to Lechayim, we could still change that. Because we note that he started to improve, different trajectory is Mechayev, a different assessment. But once the court made a determination up front that this guy's going to live, if in fact he dies and things start going south, we don't look at that as requiring a new assessment. That's double jeopardy. This guy was already potter based on initial assessments. And therefore, Lechayim, how about the middle case? Change in trajectory. We said he was going to die, but then he starts recovering. Then we follow Rabbi Nechemia. We actually go ahead and make our financial assessment. And if the guy ends up dying, that's irrelevant to us. That's viewed as new complications, and therefore the money is still paid. It just goes to his heirs. So, im liach ken yichbidu meit, mishalem nezek v'tzar, and anything else. I mean, we're just being, you know, keeping it simple, but of course it's nezek tzar, shevis, ripui boshes, and so on. All of that is paid to the yorshim. Now, question is, at what point do we make this assessment? Do we make the assessment based on the current situation or the initial situation? So, me'ematai mishalim, misha'a shehikohu. So, we talk about the difference between his value at moment before the attack and his value after the attack. The continued deterioration is not what we take into consideration. Because now that we've decided that it was not a murder case, so then it's a classic case of damages. Classic case of damages is based on the situation at that point. And anything else is viewed as new issues, which we cannot attribute necessarily directly to the attack. So who is this going to? Obviously, the whole Braita is 100% stomach Rabbi Nechemia, and therefore it looks at the new assessment as being a complete cancellation of the original Chiyuv Misa. That's why we actually take it as a normal case of Nezikin. Whew. All right, these are some very powerful issues. Hope that you all had fun. Well, anyway, one person had fun. That's me. So, looking forward to seeing you all, Bezrat Hashem, happy, healthy, well, and full of Ador very soon. And we'll join up, Bezrat Hashem, tomorrow to be able to continue our normal schedule, I hope. Kol Tov.